In today's episode, we will hear from Becky. She is a certified life coach and practitioner, helping others to break free from limiting beliefs, negative emotions, and behavioral patterns so they can achieve success in their lives. Becky opens up about what it was like to struggle with an ongoing eating disorder that started when she was just a teenager, and how it became a long-term coping strategy for emotional issues she didn't realize that she had been dealing with. Let's hear more about the street she grew up on. You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives. My name is Lena LaRue, a recovering, people-pleasing, overachieving perfectionist with a lot of repressed emotions from my past. I want to invite you on my journey to learning how one can emotionally and physically heal from difficult life experiences. The goal is to first recognize how our past experiences affect every aspect of our lives, our health, relationships, self-image, etc. Once we recognize how our past is affecting our lives, we can then decide to break free from its limiting hold it has had on us. We can learn how to break old limiting patterns of thinking and adopt other healing strategies so we can start living a guilt-free, healthy life where we can feel confident and at peace with ourselves and the world around us. If this sounds like exactly what you need, then keep on listening. None of the information you hear is meant to replace professional guidance. This podcast is meant for inspirational purposes only, and you are encouraged to seek out professional advice elsewhere.
For a long time, it was very taboo. I was very ashamed, embarrassed. You know, it was actually very hidden. And I was, it was, I grew up in a strong Catholic family. So it was one of those things that was, not talked about. It was kept very quiet, even amongst my sisters. It was not out in the open. So I can honestly say that it wasn't until I started dating my now husband. He was the very first person that I was actually open and honest with and admitted it. You know, I mean, if I, you know, throughout my life, there could be somebody that caught on to my eating disorder, but yeah, he was the first person I admitted it to, like owned it.
Before we get into all the details, let me ask you this first. If you had to describe your adolescence in just 3 to 5 words, what words would you choose?
Great question. I would say what comes to mind as me as an adolescent was I was a pleaser, goofy, and insecure. You know what? And honestly, I think goofy is such a cute little trait to have. You know, it's not weird, but it's quirky and it's cute. So goofy, you know, that's to me, that's kind of being free-spirited and, you know, just not caring so much, just being free.
Like I said before, Becky, me and the listeners, we're so grateful to you being on here, especially me. You know, the reason I started this podcast was because, you know, I am just at the very beginning of an intentional healing journey. And I, you know, want to bring on people who have gone through challenging things, maybe similar to me, maybe different, but gone through challenges and who recognized that things needed to change and they have done work on themselves. And I know that there are going to be listeners out there in my shoes that need inspiration and hope and advice. So thank you again. So Becky, why don't you share with us some more about the street you grew up on?
So, well, first off, I want to say thank you for having me. You know, it's my mission to get out to so many women and people, you know, how important it is to believe in themselves and live their life their way. So with that being said, you know, I was the eldest child. So I think a lot of times with the eldest, you know, they're wanting to be that golden child. You know, they carry a weight of being the role model to their siblings. So I held myself to a high regard. Like I said, I was a big pleaser, especially to my dad. I wanted my dad to be just so proud of me and, you know, just this amazing child and, you know, eventually student and basketball player and career woman as I got older. You know, that was always really important to me. So I had this message in my head to attain perfection. And that's never going to be attainable. It's a trap that you are setting yourself up for, you know. So it was trying to be perfect academically, trying to have that perfect body figure. And as I grew into, and I want to preface this, it was not something that my parents told me I needed to be. It was just the message in my head that I gave myself that I needed to be this perfect golden child. You know, we all come up with strategies or ways of surviving certain things in life, surviving our childhood, you know, and mine, I didn't feel like I had a lot of control. I couldn't control what happened throughout life. I couldn't control not being perfect. So my strategy became, it turned to something I could control, and that was eating or lack of. You know, I could control my weight through the eating disorder. At first, I didn't realize it. This is the craziest thing, is I had no idea that that was a strategy for me until I hired a life coach.
When Becky said she wanted to be the perfect golden child, I felt myself take a deep breath because I also had the same desire when I was younger. Wanting to be the perfect child. What an impossible task that so many of us try to accomplish. I know many of us can absolutely relate to that feeling. It is really sad when someone so young decides that they need to be perfect. They often end up with a perfectionist mindset that can cause much stress and self-criticism for years to come.
You know, when my parents discovered that I had an eating disorder, I went to a therapist, and automatically the therapist is like, oh, you know, have you been molested? Have you been sexually abused? You know, they automatically went to that. And, you know, that was at 16. And I told my mom, I'm not going back. I am not going to have them put into my head things that didn't happen. And that's the sad thing. And this is probably a whole nother conversation why I got into becoming a life coach, is because therapists, and I'm not to knock on all therapists, but they typically tend to want to
put you in a box.
Yeah. And I mean, they had brought up about my grandpa, and I'm like, do not even go there. That is like, no. So there wasn't trying to dig down into the root cause of it inside me. It was pointing a finger at somebody else.
We don't mind me asking, like, how they found out.
My sister. My sister went to them, and sorry, like, I can't imagine. I mean, she was like 19 months younger than me, and I can't imagine me, the sister that she looks up to, going, oh my gosh, I think Becky has an eating disorder. She saw remnants of it in the toilet and went to my mom and told her. And my mom, you know, she came to me and she asked, and at first I denied it. And then I just said, it's just a one-time thing. I had tried, you know, my best friend from high school was like deep into it.
My heart broke for Becky as she remembered what it was like when her sister and mother found out.
At first, I thought it was just a way for me to control my weight and be able to eat whatever I want and not consume all the calories, and I could just get rid of it later. And doctors after doctors, you know, over the years, I mean, we're talking like, you know, I ended up having to go see a gastroenterologist in my 30s because I had esophagus damage, you know, and they would ask me, you know, are you on antidepressant medicine? Have you seen a therapist? I'm like, no, there's nothing mental going on. It's my way to control weight. And I really thought for the longest time it was. And then when I started seeing my life coach, it was late 30s. And I had told him about it, and he's like, okay. I'm like, that's not a big deal. And he's like, no, it's just a strategy that you have used to self-medicate as a form of control. Some people use alcohol. Some people use drugs. Some people use cutting.
Or overeating, right?
Yes. Yes. Or starving themselves. You know, we all have our own way of self-medicating. And I had no way. I didn't even know what self-medicating was until that.
Let's look at a definition for coping strategies that I found on the American Psychological Association website. A coping strategy is an action, a series of actions, or a thought process used in meeting a stressful or unpleasant situation, or in modifying one's reaction to such a situation. Coping strategies typically involve a conscious and direct approach to problems. And according to the Positive Psychology website, there are coping strategies that are deemed unhealthy and healthy. Becky mentioned some of these unhealthy coping strategies before. Here are some examples of unhealthy coping strategies according to the Positive Psychology website. Constant busyness or failure to talk about emotions are avoidance coping strategies. Overthinking in the form of rumination and exaggerating the situation. Isolation and not seeking out help. Substance abuse, such as using drugs and alcohol. Smoking. Denial of problems. Impulsive spending, overeating, undereating, self-harm, such as cutting oneself.
So obviously there's positive ways to self-medicate, which, you know, could be going for a walk, working out. And that's why working out has been such a huge thing for me, is that is my positive and healthy way of self-medicating. It's, I can control it. We all can. We get to control whether we work out or not, right?
Yes, absolutely.
I asked Becky how old she was when her eating disorder began. When she told me she was 15 years old, just a sophomore in high school, I felt my heart break again.
You know, as with most things, it started out as like every so often doing it. And then, it became more often, occurred, you know, more occasionally. And then, I mean, I was at a point at my lowest where it was daily. Once a day, every day, for probably 10 years.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, heartbreaking.
Yes. Back. That's what I feel for little Becky right now, you know?
If there's a takeaway for all the parents out there, I will say this is because I think it became worse, you know, as a parent of from a place of love, it comes from a place of wanting to support. Don't try and stop them, because it's a strategy and it's a form of control for that person. And to try to stop it, you never will. It's like anybody with any addiction or any type of self-medicating, they have to have the want to. Yeah. So to try and stop it, they're going to have to get to that, their own point. And I think somebody trying to control it will only make it worse, because it's starting out as a form of control. So then to try to control that person's thing they're using as control, you're just going to like totally kick up your heels to it. And that's why, you know, with Eric, he looked at me and he said, I will never judge you for it. And I will never tell you don't do it. And I mean, that was 2 weeks later. I had no doctor at that point yet, no life coach yet. 2 weeks later, I had already started my healing journey from that. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. And the why wasn't ever discovered. I didn't even know the why. The why wasn't discovered until, like I said, my late 30s. And it's something that I will always, to some degree, battle. It's like smoking and I smoke too. It's like smoking a cigarette. If you say cigarette and a cup of coffee, oh my God, that sounds so good. And I'm a non-smoker, and I have been for a while, but it just, there's some things it's just in your wiring at that point. It's going to be, that's like why alcoholics, you know, like they, most of them have to never have a drink again because, you know, you can get right back into it. So not only will I battle with this, especially at emotional times, that's why it's so important to find a healthy way of self-medicating. So when those emotions hit in or those triggers hit, I, rather than go straight to the eating disorder, I go to something else.
I asked Becky if she still struggles with having that perfectionist mindset that she mentioned earlier. She mentions how it does creep in, and when it does, her supportive, loving husband offers her reassuring words of wisdom. When Becky explained how her husband supports her in moments of perfectionism or self-criticism, I couldn't help but just smile and feel so happy for their supportive relationship.
I would say it creeps in at times, yes. You know, Eric, my husband, he's so, because he knows I struggle so much, you know, and we talk, and he'll ask me, you doing okay today, you know, and he's learned and figured out with me, if I start getting edgy or I get agitated, that he knows that I'm probably struggling with the eating disorder. And he'll ask me, you know, what are you battling with? What, you know, and then I'll let him know, oh, I screwed up on this, or I, you know, didn't do that or whatever. And he'll remind me that just take one thing at a time and try to do that one thing. You know, you don't have to be perfect at all of it. But yeah, it creeps in. I think that's part of my, probably a little bit of part of just who I am and, you know, one of my characteristics, to be honest, you know.
Speaking of perfectionist personalities and being too harsh on ourselves, Becky and I share how it can be easy for us to show compassion to others, but not give ourselves that same compassion.
With my husband, when he gets so like upset at himself or criticizes himself, I'm like, dude, you're just a human. Relax.
Yeah.
Like everything's going to be okay. But it's funny because that's the kind, what I tell him is what I need to tell myself, because he and I are almost like so alike. It's freaky. Anyway.
I was just going to say that. Isn't it ironic how, and Eric, he can mess up something or he, you know, runs over an extension cord and he's so pissed off at himself. And I'll be like, babe, give yourself that grace. Like, it's okay. It's just an extension cord. I mean, would I apply that to me? Heck no. I'm going to beat myself up 6 different ways, you know, and it's like, geez. But we do that. We give other people grace, but then we won't give ourselves that. And so that's a work in progress.
Yes.
For sure.
Becky didn't allow her eating disorder to hold her back from going forward in life. She was a single mom to 2 really great daughters. She also had a great sales career in the construction industry. But she still felt like something wasn't totally right.
You are listening to The Streets of Our Lives with Lena LaRue. In order to stay accountable to improving your overall well-being, you need systems in place to help you stay focused on your intentions. A simple and affordable system you can implement is tracking your day-to-day habits and actions in a journal. Lucky for you, I have a collection of journals that I have created to help you do just that. My 90-day wellness journals are meant to help you keep track of your day. Each day, you will be able to track the following: your food and supplement intake, your physical activity or self-care practices, your physical symptoms, and your emotions and feelings. You also have a section to set your daily intentions at the beginning of the day, as well as a section at the end of the day to reflect on your challenges and successes and what you are grateful for. These journals are great for those who are keeping track of their mood and emotions, for those who have specific weight goals, for those who are recovering post-surgery or injury, for those who are preparing for an athletic competition, and for anyone who simply just wants to keep track of their overall well-being. You can purchase these journals online at Amazon. I will make sure to put a link in the show notes so you can get one of these journals for yourself or for a loved one. Now, let's get back to the show.
But I did always feel like I had this void somewhere. Like I was happy. And, you know, if you were to ask me, I'd say, yeah, I'm happy. But there was something missing. And I never knew what it was, you know, but it was, I was not going to let life knocked me down. I had a feeling that somewhere in there, some of that was probably the eating disorder in some way was part of that hole, that void that I was feeling, that little black hole that kind of like would nag at you. And I dated, and I was, I mean, after my divorce, I was single for, you know, I dated and stuff, but I mean, I was single for 16 years. And I had wondered if maybe that was a hole that I hadn't found the partner. And then Eric and I started dating, and it was like this combination, the epiphany that I didn't have to be perfect. My eating disorder was okay. I'm still accepted. It's not my identity as Becky. It's just something that I did, and that's okay. I'll get a handle on it. You know, and these were all things that Eric initially told me. And then eventually, you know, when I went and saw his life coach that he recommended, the life coach, and that's when there was like this aha, like, oh my gosh, I can be free from this. I can choose to be free from this thing that's weighing me down. And, you know, I had this inner peace that just, even the first session I ever had with the life coach, I just found this peace that, you know what, I'm going to be okay. I'm going to get through this. I'm going to conquer it. Am I going to probably have harder days than others? Yes. But I see that light at the end of the tunnel now. Because, I mean, honestly, going through my 20s and 30s, I can remember thinking, am I going to be doing this into my 70s? Like, is this just what I'm going to do the rest of my life?
I guess that is a thought you would have, right?
Yeah, I didn't know how to control it. It controlled me.
When Becky shared the thought that she had of, am I going to be doing this for the rest of my life? I asked her if that was another light bulb moment for her, if that thought scared her into wanting to stop the eating disorder.
It scared me, but not enough to quit it. Because I didn't know what the root cause was. I didn't know what was underneath it and why I was doing it. And that's where the subconscious comes into all this, is your subconscious mind will repress pain and trauma to help you survive. And that's what it did.
I don't know about you, but I certainly believe this to be true, that our subconscious will try to repress emotions that come from our past traumas in order to help us survive. As we have heard in a previous episode with my other guest, Rochelle, our body doesn't just forget our trauma. Our emotions don't just magically go away to emotion land. Our repressed emotions get stuck in our bodies and thus affect our mental health and physical health. So because I know that Becky has been intently working on her healing journey for the past 6 or 7 years now, specifically through working with her own life coach, I knew she must have figured out what the root cause of her eating disorder was.
I ended up finding out the root cause was that I needed to remove was guilt and anger. And that's where we have, you know, those five layers. There's five different layers of emotions, and guilt, anger, and shame are three of the five. And those were, you know, I felt guilt for having this awful eating disorder. Like, who does this to themselves? Like, how can you keep doing this? You know, kind of a thing, you know. And I mean, I would say probably it's only been the last decade that, you know, people have actually been more open about their struggles, you know, whether it's addiction or whatever it is. You know, before that, it was like, oh, we don't talk about that. Like, you know, or there's the denial factor of, oh no, my daughter, she doesn't have eating disorder. You know, there's, so I carried a lot of guilt with the even having that, and shame, obviously. And the anger part came in was because I just got to a point in my life where I carried so much guilt and shame. I'm just like furious about it. Like, I just can't stand this. It's like, I'm so angry that I'm feeling this way about myself.
Becky goes into how part of the healing journey is not only finding supportive people who won't judge you, but how to handle it when people do try to condemn you and judge you and your struggles.
It's important to make sure that you are connected with supportive people, people that aren't going to judge for it, because there is not one person out there that doesn't do or have things that they could be judged for, you know. So who are you to judge me for my struggles? Part of the healing for me was understanding that perception is projection. That's the coaching term, and probably the layman's term for it would be that every person has their own thoughts and their own opinions of things, and they are just portraying it onto other people. Like, so basically, what anybody else says doesn't mean shit about you. It doesn't matter what somebody says about me. One person may say you're ugly and one person may say you're beautiful. Neither of them are wrong or right. It's all in how you feel about you. And that was a huge freeing moment when it finally like clicked in my head that people are projecting their own stuff. And most of the opinions that people have of others and judgment is actually what they feel about themselves. And that was huge. So somebody, you know, oh, you know, you're weak for giving into an eating disorder. They're actually projecting things about themselves, feeling weak for their own struggles inside. You know, my life coach, I'm like, why do I keep doing this? Like, why am I struggling with this? And he's like, it's a strategy. That's all it is. It's a strategy you use to get through life and to survive for that period of time. And you can choose to be done with it.
You can choose other strategies.
Speaking of other strategies, Becky told me more about a strategy she started using that helped her on her healing journey. What strategy are we talking about? Hypnotherapy. I won't lie. I used to have an opinion on hypnotherapy that it was crazy and fake and cheesy, but I have since changed my preconceived notions about it. If you think hypnotherapy may be this woo-woo, weird thing, I encourage you to listen to this next part. You may find that you change your mind like I did.
We did some hypnotizing at one point. And, you know, it was the things that I wanted to free myself from. And how do you replace it? And that's what that's a whole nother thing. You know, a hypnotherapist does for you is they talk to your subconscious mind to tell you what you're taking out of your life and what you're replacing it with.
I'll tell you something, Becky, when I don't remember what it was when you and I first connected. We connected through Instagram. And I think the first time I ever saw you mention something about the hypnotherapy, I won't lie, I was kind of like, oh, great. She's going to be one of those. She's going to be one of those freaks, you know, they see in the movies or something. No offense. Okay. And I was like, oh, no. And then I'll tell you, I've told myself a lot, you know what, Lena, things aren't always what you think they are, what they seem, you know, certain things get a bad rap for things.
Well, in Hollywood.
Hollywood. Yeah. Yeah. That too. It's like you see things in movies and you're just like, oh, great.
They have totally ruined hypnotherapy. It's not about getting on stage and barking like a dog or clucking like a chicken. Honestly, I'll tell you, just so you don't think I'm crazy or like one of those, it's like deep meditation. You don't sleep. You're in deep meditation, which complete relaxed state of mind. And you're having somebody talk to your subconscious mind because that's where everything happens. You don't need smoking anymore. You don't need to turn to this as your strategy, you know, and I can't force you to do anything. I'm just the facilitator. You're actually, your subconscious mind is highly, highly moral. So you will not do anything that you're not aligned with, that doesn't align with your morals and ethics.
It makes sense, right? And at the end of the day, my mind is going to try to protect me too. So it's like, you're not going to try to like get me to go to sleep and like, Lena, stick your hand in your pocket and pull out your wallet and give me $500.
No.
I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Becky shares another powerful tool that she uses in her healing journey, which is noticing the triggers when they come up and figuring out how to pivot yourself away from your detrimental coping strategies to towards healthier ones.
Once I was able to figure out triggers for me, things that triggered me into binging rather than going working. Because the thing is if you start going, if you're getting triggered and you go down your self-medicating path that isn't healthy, you're not going to later that day more than likely turn to healthy version. Like you go down that downward spiral. So I learned that when I'm feeling this upset or I'm starting to want to reach for food or go to want to binge, I've learned that I was triggered. I know to go, okay, what am I triggered by? What am I stressing out about? Why am I in fight or flight mode? Why am I in survival mode? Because that's when you get triggered, that's where you go, is into survival mode. And survival mode, I'll explain, is like if you were to be walking in the forest and you come across a bear and it's like, oh my God, like you go into that fight or flight. And that's when I would realize that, you know, I would turn to the binging, the food, the emotional eating, something to fix it. So if I could be aware of that and I can catch that, then all of a sudden, okay, let me go work. Let me see what I'm triggered by and then try to get off the cliff, so to speak. You know, so if it were a trigger, we'll say it was an argument with my husband and that had me upset, you know, be like, okay, that's what I'm triggered by. Don't go into eating. Everything's going to be okay. We'll work it out. You know, we both love each other. It doesn't mean he doesn't love me because we had an argument, you know, and then, you know, like working through that, almost like talking yourself down. And there's techniques for that. Like when you get into a deep trigger. And I learned all about that. That's what eventually why I became a life coach myself, is to help people be able to do that too. But yeah, so then, you know, learning the triggers, I could come down off the cliff and then I'm like, okay, you know, it's going to be okay. Like, you know, I'm going to go work out. That gives me endorphins. I feel good. And the endorphins, they're like a freaking drug. And keeping me working out is such a strong way for me to go, you know what? I just worked my butt off in the gym. I don't want to go ruin that by binging. Like, you know, that's why, you know, I'm feeling good. I got a workout in, that was my win. And it just keeps you wanting to stay on that right path, you know, and we see a lot of it. It's like, once you get your mind right, so many other aspects of your life fall into place, whether it's your workouts, your career, your relationships. Like once you have your mind right and you're able to have that healthy mindset, everything else is like, you know, it just kind of just all goes on down the line.
While adopting healthy habits and new strategies is good for us, Becky and I both agreed that if one only does this for very surface level reasons, these healthier strategies may not be very effective or long lasting.
You know, you may start out as you're working out for aesthetics reasons, but that it won't last. The motivation for, you know, wanting to be whatever size you want to be or whatever weight, that won't last because the mind will eventually take control over that when the triggers hit, when the emotional upsets come into play.
You're absolutely right.
So it has to be the working out or the whatever positive self-medicating, it has to be for more than just, you know, on the outside. It's or because you should, like you said.
My reason now for going to the gym, it is not aesthetic as how it was before. And it's not because, oh, I should do that because, you know, that's what you hear and, you know, I want to be a healthy person, especially as I get older. No. My reason for going to the gym, and I never even thought that this could be a reason until recently, but my reason for going to the gym is to retrain my brain. So my brain learns, like you said, the subconscious. So my subconscious learns that I matter and that I don't have to feel guilty for giving myself 30 minutes to an hour and a half every day working out. And it's also a way for me to train my brain, like how to set boundaries with myself and with
others because I'm training my brain like, hey, this is your set time. Like, this is for you. Like, this is good. You're going to go to the gym. And it also is non-verbally telling others, this is me time. Nothing's going to get in between that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like non-verbally, setting boundaries. So that's – and that reason for me, Becky, is so much stronger than aesthetics or, oh, I want to have a big juicy peach one day. Of course, that would be a great bonus. Don't get me wrong. You know, I still look at the mirror and I'm like, oh, girl, okay, look at you getting stronger. But but my reasoning is so much deeper.
It's keeping that commitment to yourself. And the more you keep that commitment to yourself, the more you believe in yourself. And then that becomes your belief system and it's a pattern and habit and eventually it just becomes your way of life.
It is obvious that Becky has done a lot of work to change her perceptions and to rewire her subconscious mind to help her in healing and especially in recovering from an eating disorder. You've also heard that she is now a life coach herself on a mission to help other women overcome their personal struggles. As of the time of this recording, Becky helps others on their healing journeys through offering life coaching and hypnotherapy. I asked her to go into more detail about how she serves her clients.
How I help is, I mean, everybody has their own struggles. We all have our own crap, so to speak. You know, so it's me teaching people and helping them figure out different ways to deal with they're upset, their limiting beliefs. You know, when I say limiting beliefs, it may be, you know, somebody doesn't really think that they could ever do that well in a gym, or, you know, it could be somebody that doesn't think that they could have their own business, or, oh, I'm not very good at marketing. And it's like, well, when did you decide that? What made you decide this limiting belief about yourself? And that gets people thinking, oh, you know, and then you start talking about where it comes from, what the root cause was, and getting rid of that limiting belief. Because we've all got this in our mind. We've got our beliefs, our patterns, our ethics, our identity, you know, and so many people attribute what they things that they do to who they are. And that, oh, well, I'm a smoker. Well, no, that doesn't identify you. You just are a person that smokes. So it's about getting down to the root cause of what people's struggles are. And, you know, it can be anything. It could be weight loss. It could be why the person is struggling sleeping. Confidence, that's a huge one, especially for women, is what is the root cause of your confidence? And I do a lot of time techniques, which is going back to figuring out when they first decided certain things about themselves. Or, you know, if you've got somebody that struggles with anger, well, can you remember the first time that you ever felt angry? And it's time techniques, and you're going back to, usually it's around anywhere between 3 and 8 years old. A lot of stuff comes from childhood stuff that we're not even aware of, you know. And the hypnotherapy, if that can help with, like I said, removing limiting beliefs, negative emotions, and replacing them with positive ones.
I asked Becky if she would share with us an example or two of clients that she has helped.
I'll give you a couple examples. One was a client having a fear of throw up. And it was like a huge, like, disabling fear when if they heard somebody, like, it said, like, they're coughing, like they're about to throw up, or they heard somebody throwing up in the bathroom. And it would get to the point where tracks, or they wouldn't want to go to certain places because that fear was so strong. You know, so I did some time techniques on that person to figure out where that root cause was of it. Like why they were so fearful. They'd be fearful that if they heard somebody throwing up, oh my God, I'm going to be next. I'm going to be the one throwing up, you know? So you do time techniques to take them back to when the first experience was, and you trust the subconscious. You know, if I ask you a question, you know, did what, at what age did blah, blah, blah happen? And you just trust it, whatever comes to your mind. You don't necessarily know consciously, but your subconscious mind knows everything. Your subconscious mind makes up over 99% of your mind. I know. So your conscious mind only makes up 0.006%. I mean, that's like tiny. Our brains are unbelievable. Our minds are unbelievable. So that's, you know, one way of, say, helping somebody. You know, I mean, one of my favorite things is helping women with their confidence, because I was not, I was actually a very insecure person for many, many years. And it goes back to, I ended up finding out the why was because I didn't feel good enough. I didn't feel worthy enough. So that's one of my favorite ways of helping. And in some way, you know, a lot of people don't feel good enough, or they don't feel that they do it right, you know, or I can never get it right. Or, you know, no matter how hard I try, it's never good enough. That's a big one, because that one hits home for me. So, you know, I had another client that was struggling with progression in the gym, and it was started with lack of sleep. And, you know, if you're not sleeping right, you're not getting your recovery time in, you're going to keep struggling. So we had to go back and figure out what was causing the lack of sleep. And it was due to stress that they were unaware of, you know, because your mind's not turning off, so you're not sleeping. I actually, that was hypnotherapy I did on that person. You know, like, you know, when you lay down and you go to sleep, you're going to tell yourself, okay, it's time to sleep, you know, shut the brain off. And I used that as a way to, and it helped.
To bring this whole conversation full circle, Becky, I want to ask you this question. You know, I'd asked you before if you could describe your teen years in 3 to 5 words. You had said the 3 words you would use were pleaser, goofy, and insecure. So if you had to describe your present life in just 3 to 5 words, what words would they be?
I like that question. I really like that question. And I probably like it so much because I've had so much growth from where I was. So I would say freedom, confident, and safe.
Oh, those are words. Those are words that I want to say one day. I love it. Those are words I'm going to say one day. Freedom, confident, and safe. I know that those are words that we have all wanted to use to describe our lives, especially if you are at the very beginning of your healing journey. Freedom, not feeling like you're trapped by others or by your coping strategies or addictions. Confident, you can hold your head up and feel good in your own body. Safe, to feel at ease, being able to let down your walls and feel reassured that you are in a safe place. As we were finishing up our conversation, Becky wanted to share a short story to illustrate what her healing journey looks like now.
You know what I realized? I'll tell you a quick story. This was years ago. It was in my late 20s, and I was sitting at a stoplight. There was a host that came on to a radio program, you know, it's commercial, and he's talking, and he says something, and I bust out laughing, like stomach, from the pit of my stomach, the bottom of my stomach, just belly laughing. And I sat there, and I'm like, oh my God, I haven't laughed like that in so long. And now, because I have so much freeness inside myself, just free spirited and just way more go with the flow, I laugh like that almost every day at something. I mean, it usually has to do with Eric, you know, but even seeing something on Instagram, or it could be something like stupid or whatever, but it just, I'm laughing because I have that freedom inside me. I'm not in chains anymore. And that's huge. That's a huge thing for me.
Wow. That's powerful. She is no longer in chains anymore. That's what this podcast is all about. We are seeking to break free from the chains of our past and live the lives we have always wanted.
I have been so motivated and inspired by Becky from afar, seeing her great content on Instagram and thinking, wow, I want to be like her. And then being able to invite her to the podcast just added another level of admiration. When talking to her, I realized something though. It's not necessarily that I want to be like Becky, but it's more so I want to experience what she is feeling, that freedom, confidence, and security. If you felt inspired and encouraged by Becky, I urge you to reach out to her and see if she can offer support for your healing journey. I'm going to share her contact information in the description of the episode so you can reach her. While I found myself smiling and just resonating with Becky in so many parts of this conversation, a key takeaway I would like to share is this. It is so important to surround yourself with others who see past your coping strategies, triggers, or addictions, and who realize that you are more than those things. That those things don't define who you are or your worth. You know, I am so grateful for both Becky's husband, Eric, and for Becky's life coach. Neither of them criticized her because they both realized that her eating disorder behavior was just a temporary strategy. They both showed her that she can be loved and appreciated with or without the eating disorder, and that it is possible to get to a place where you no longer have to engage in those kinds of coping strategies. So for those of us who may find ourselves stuck using coping strategies that aren't actually solving the real problem, we can get to a place where we don't need to use these things anymore. We can figure out the root cause to our issues. We just have to take the first step to make the decision to start healing. Will you make the decision to start healing? This is Lena LaRue. I'll see you on the streets. You just listened to an episode of The Streets of Our Lives. This is Lena LaRue, the host and producer. I hope that you were encouraged and inspired by this episode. If you were, please help others find the podcast by subscribing, sharing, or leaving a rating on the show. Please feel free to reach out to me with any comments, questions, or suggestions for upcoming episodes. And if you'd like to monetarily support the show, you can find a link to make a donation in the description of the episode. I really thank you for your support.